gonna come and out of the sky. Or won't you take me down to Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move. Hey, you need a traveling pain.
Yeah. And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to another Moment of Silence for the Newtown, Connecticut episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
And those crickets you hear is the absence of Hermano da Silva, but fear not, we will press on.
Yes, he will be actually our special correspondent of The Hobbit, from Hobbiton.
So editing magic?
They'll be editing magic. Magic.
Awesome.
No magic, he's going to be talking to us live from Hobbiton.
Gotcha. What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. In this episode, we'll be talking about Peter Jackson's return to Middle-earth, The Hobbit. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I'll go first. I only had one movie that I was able to see. I saw Edward Scissorhands, finally.
Finally!
Yes. And boy, what a letdown.
Really?
Yes. This is not a good movie.
Really? Oh, see, it's been a while since I've seen it. I like to revisit that, I think.
See, that's the thing. So I watched it with the wife, and she had seen it a number of times, and she loves it. And afterwards, she asked me, what'd you think? And I was like, And she was like, really? I was like, yeah. And she thought about it for a second and said, well, maybe if you were a kid when you watched it, you'd have a different opinion about it. Because there's really no substance to this movie whatsoever. It is all visual style. And the story is so traditional. Like, a stranger comes to town, you know, with, you know, obviously weird hands, but...
He's implements of death hands.
He's different from everybody else, and everybody loves him at first, but of course there's a misunderstanding, and then it becomes like a story about, you know, Frankenstein, essentially. Yeah. So... And then, you know, the whole ending, it's like a marshmallow, you know? It's a lot of fluff and no substance. I really didn't see anything. I mean, the makeup effects are great. The visual style is amazing. Of course, you know, Tim Burton really has a good knack for the visual style, especially earlier on in his career. This was a year after... Batman.
All right.
You know, and I actually still say that Tim Burton Batman is the best of the Batmans.
I still love that Batman. It's right over there on my case. You cool. Can see it from here.
So I actually will have to say nay.
Oh,
on Edward Scissorhands. Yes.
Harsh.
All right, Walter.
I saw only one movie this week. I had the choice of seeing Trainspotting, which is in my list of shame. Uh-huh. So I figured I'd watch that. Or I could see Safety Not Guaranteed. And I made the unwise choice of watching Safety Not Guaranteed.
Really?
Are
you familiar with Duplass Brothers movies?
No.
Actually, I'm sorry. Mark Duplass only starred in it. It's not his movie. This is a Colin Trevorrow movie.
Yeah. It's listed as a comedy, and the premise is what hooked me initially. There's a couple of interns who find an ad in a magazine saying, I need a companion to time travel with me.
Which is based off of a real ad.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, this ad actually existed, so they developed this movie around that ad.
Well, it shows. because the movie just has plot lines that go nowhere. It's as if somebody said, I want to make a quirky movie about time travel with quirky characters and shoot it in a very indie style. But first, I'm going to watch Napoleon Dynamite.
Interesting.
Because like the opening scene of the movie is a conversation... between the lead actress, could you please give me... Aubrey Plaza. And,
Mark Duplass?
No, it's a manager from, like, a restaurant. She's trying to get a job, a paying job, because she's a non-paid intern.
Basil Harris?
Let's see, is that him? Yeah, that's him. And, it's Talking Heads. It reminded me of, like, the same kind of weird Talking Heads shots they use in Birdemic, where people are just talking flatly at the camera. And there's, like, no life to it.
Interesting.
And then, you know, they go on the trip to go, you know, find this guy and see if he's actually crazy or not. And there's a plot line involving the reporter who they're actually interning for. And he reunites with an ex-girlfriend from like 20 years ago, and she's still attractive and she's single, and then that plot line just stops. It just goes nowhere for no reason. I couldn't really find any of the characters likable. The story, I mean, for a fairly straightforward story, it just plods along. And the side character of he's an Indian guy. I don't have his name because I don't have anything in front of me at the moment because we are a little technologically hindered this episode.
Anyway,
Yeah, but play Amal, played by Karan Sani, utterly useless. He does. You could take him completely out of the movie and save yourself about 20 minutes of screen time, and the movie story will not change.
really?
I won't say how it ends. The ending is fairly sweet for what it is, but this movie, I can't recommend it. It's going to be an A on Safety Not Guaranteed.
Interesting. All right. And hopefully, magical editing ensues right now.
I watched a movie called Days of Heaven, directed by Terrence Malick and starring Richard Gere, Brooke Adams, and Sam Shepard. The IMDb synopsis is: a hot-tempered farm laborer convinces the woman he loves to marry their rich but dying boss so that they could have a claim to his fortune. This movie's from 1978. Like I said, directed by Terrence Malick. I like this one quite a bit. Maybe not as much as Badlands, but this one's pretty good as well. You can definitely see some of like Tree of Life, like early Tree of Life type shots in this movie. It's well acted. You get a lot of those quiet, no dialogue scenes from you're accustomed to seeing from most of Terrence Malick's other movies, where people are just just doing things, and he just films people doing stuff like working on they collecting wheat in fields and stuff like that. And the majority of the beginning of the movie is like that, and then you get to where Richard Gere convinces his girlfriend to get Sam Shepard's attention pretty much, and he's already kind of smitten with her. He asks people around the farm about her and stuff like that. And the movie's actually really good. Where it goes, it's sort of expected where it's gonna go, but it didn't take away from the movie for me. There are some absolutely beautiful shots in this movie, like stuff you normally only see in like nature documentaries, like just gorgeous, gorgeous cinematography in this movie. It's not a very long movie. It's only about an hour and a half, and for me right now, it's probably my maybe third favorite Terrence Malick movie. You could definitely do worse. I definitely say yay on this one.
Okay, so let's move on into Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a movie trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Walter?
And now we're gonna probably start with probably the biggest trailer hitch I've ever hitched my wagon to,
Whoa.
Pacific Rim. All right, there is no hiding the fact that I love big robots. I love anime. I grew up watching shows like Force 5, which is a five. It was over the course of a week, and it was five different giant robot shows that Fox used to run on your early mornings before I went to school. Just this movie, even the anime series Evangelion, Big O, pretty much any big robot animated series, that I've watched, I've really just embraced and just really liked.
Well, obviously, Guillermo del Toro, the director, is using that as an influence.
Oh, and it shows that he's got a love for it probably as much as I do. It features the voice of GLaDOS from Portal and Portal 2, and I heard that. I was like, oh, here, we're in for a treat. And then when you finally see like some of the mech design, like, oh, it's like a it's it, oh. What you see in the trailer, it just looks great. Like, it just incorporates all these elements.
And the next James Bond is in this movie.
Really?
Idris Elba.
Oh no, no, that's not that won't happen. But he, but even Idris Elba looks like he's about to, like he looks like that grizzled,
you know,
like general, like
in his scene, in his monologue in the trailer. You know what he's doing is he's channeling Bill Pullman from Independence
Day. That's the first thing that I thought. But I don't know how many mechs are actually going to be
featured.
That's funny.
Charlie Day is in this movie.
Oh shit! Yeah,
Ron Perlman.
But this. The mechanic designs, you see two of the mechs in the trailer. I'm not sure if they're the only two mechs or if there are others, but one looks like a combination of a Gundam Zaku and a Master Chief from Halo with elements of the Big O. And the other one, you don't see what it does, but it has four arms.
Yeah, it's interesting. I when reading about this movie, I expected the drivers, if you will, to be within the robots, but then they're not. They're in their own little suits, remote controlling them.
Yeah, that's like that. I'm wondering if there might be a change in that later on. If they're actually going to be in the suits, or if they're going to be controlling. Because it looked like, I mean, they could go either way with it. Where like they're walking, and maybe they have like some sort of pod they can get. I don't know. Yeah. It's really hard to tell by the trailer. However, from what I've seen in the trailer, giant monsters come out of the ocean. Send in giant robots to fight giant monsters. Battles ensue, and it just looks good. It's gonna be fantastic. And then there's a closing scene in the trailer where you just see a mech just get flung over a bunch of bridges, crash into a number of overpasses, and then get into like a battle-ready stance. Like it tumbles, rolls, and stops itself, and is just ready to get back into the fight. And then like totally hitched to this trailer.
Yeah.
Completely, okay. I am in.
Yeah, even when I. Just heard about the synopsis of it and who's directing it. I was like, yeah, I'm on board.
Well, there have been teaser images. I've been following this for a while. There have been a lot of teaser images released about, like, you never got to see any of the mechs, really. But there's, like, people, like, you know, characters of, you know, like, Idris Elba in his costume and the female, there's an Asian actress in there and her outfit. You don't really see anything else. So I've been seeing all these, like, little snippets. I'm like, when's the trailer going to come out? And then it finally comes out and... Oh, was I satisfied? It's going to be great. I know it's going to be great.
Hopefully you're not let down.
I hope not. I don't think I'm going to be, though.
So, one of the trailers that I saw before The Hobbit was After Earth, starring Will Smith and Jaden Smith. And my first reaction as the trailer finished was like, I know who's the director, but I saw no mention of him whatsoever.
Who's the director?
M. Night Shyamalan. So after a crash landing, a father and son explore a planet that was evacuated by humans 1,000 years earlier. So the trailer gives off this vibe of a whole bunch of different combinations from 10,000 BC to Avatar to just other sci-fi movies, you know. And it's interesting that it's also coming out around the same time as... maybe it is... the Tom Cruise movie Oblivion.
I still haven't seen this trailer yet.
And I think it's coming out earlier in the year, but After Earth is coming out in June 7th of 2013. So, you know, a lot of people have shit on Shyamalan, obviously, for his movies since...
The Sixth Sense.
No, I'd say since The Village.
Or Unbreakable.
So, I really enjoy The Village, but... Lady in the Water, I thought sucked, I still haven't seen The Happening.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
I have not seen The Last Airbender either. Which
oh, that's another. That's you know what? Watch them back to back.
I'd rather not watch The Last Airbender, anyways. But you know, I still have this little burning coal of a nugget of hope for this guy. That there has to be talent still there for him to create a good movie. I don't know why I'm holding on to this last thread of hope, you know, from him. But I for some reason I just keep looking back at his first few movies and I'm like, it's there somehow. It's there, you know. But maybe it's just he's gone too far and he doesn't have any no men. Maybe he has just a bunch of yes men, you know, working with him, telling him that no, you should go this way and not this way.
This is a brilliant idea. Let it be this.
So, and I love Will Smith. I think he's a great actor. You know, I think he can carry a movie.
Hollywood has proven he can carry a movie.
Yeah,
just like that.
Yeah. So, and maybe his chemistry with his son is going to be good. I don't know.
Well, no, he was his son was with him in Pursuit of Happiness.
That's true.
And that was a pretty damn good movie from what I remember.
Haven't seen that one. So I don't know. I'll hitch my wagon to After Earth because I like sci-fi. And there's that one thread of hope for Shyamalan that I still
have. It's the hope that brings you back.
Yes.
Hermano, what's going on over there in Hobbiton? What trailers have you been seeing?
Okay, let's talk about The Hobbit.
All right.
The plot. A younger and more reluctant hobbit, Bilbo Baggins, sets out on an unexpected journey to the Lonely Mountain with a spirited group of dwarves to reclaim their stolen mountain home from a dragon named Smaug. The director, Peter Jackson. The actors, Martin Freeman, Ian McKellen, and Richard Armitage. Walter, we all know that you have yet to finish the original Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah, watching.
Watching the trilogy. However, have you read the book The Hobbit?
I have. Not recently, but I have.
Okay, but so then what did you think of this adaptation?
All right. I like The Hobbit. I remember reading The Hobbit for the first time as a kid. And when I do, when I decide to go back and revisit that book, I can burn through that book in maybe an hour or two. It does not need to be three freaking movies. And that is the first thing that made me angry about this. It's just like, great, now you're giving me a movie that I have to watch in three parts to get the whole thing. And you're going to add a bunch of shit that's not going to be in it. You know, like the Pale Orc, not in the movie. You know, there's a bunch of just elements that are in this movie.
Not in the book, you mean?
Yeah, not in the book. It's in the movie, not in the book. And it does nothing for the characters or show. It's just there. It's mindless. Like, oh look, a villain, do something. Because a lot of The Hobbit is traveling and talking. There are a couple of scenes in the book which are obviously going to come much later than what they do now.
Now, from what I gather, is there's been an appendices and like some other. Add-on material that Tolkien wrote that they've adapted for this trilogy.
Tolkien wrote a book called The Silmarillion, which I've never read.
Okay.
It's supposedly like Hobbit Part 2, and it goes into like more a couple of things in more detail. I believe it came after The Hobbit, and then he wrote The Lord of the Rings. And I mean, all right, I'm gonna judge it by the base of the fact. I'm gonna try to judge this on the movie and not let my knowledge of the book cloud. The movie part.
Which is what I ask for you with every single adaptation.
I know, but initially going into this, I was like, I was kind of going over my thoughts about how I felt about the movie, and initially pretty negative. But all right, we'll start with the 48 frames per second. Did you see it in a 48?
I saw it in 48 frames, yes, HFR 3D.
All right, so you saw it in 3D.
Yes.
I saw it in 2D. Uh-huh. So what did you think of the 48 frames per second? Did you notice anything different?
Well, if you saw it in 2D, you had to have seen it in 24 frames.
No, they were showing it in 48 frames in IMAX, but not. I wasn't watching it in 3D.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that they released Providence it that
Place.
Way.
Yeah, it's in three. They have it in three different formats over at the Providence Place Mall.
Are you sure it was 48 frames?
I'm pretty sure it was 48 frames. I mean, a lot of the stuff looked blurry. Like the opening scene where you see like the Bilbo is talking about. Well, old Bilbo's talking about the old town near the dwarves. When the camera moves along, I see a lot of blurring on the edges, and it was driving me nuts.
Okay, so...
Because it seems like it wasn't...
Let me tell you about my 3D experience, because normally I avoid 3D, but I considered this to be, like, the Avatar of this year.
All right.
So, regarding the technology. So I wanted to see it in 48 frames 3D. And it is by far the best 3D I've ever seen. And there was no blurring. So you know how when you see a 3D movie, whether it's post-converted or shot in 3D, there's been like a little bit of a shadow,
yeah.
You know, effect, a ghost effect. And during action scenes, during fast motion, that you've seen a lot of blurring.
Yep.
In this, there was none. It was the crispest, clearest, most visually stunning 3D I've ever seen. And I have to attribute that to the 48 frames per second. So this makes me think that I don't think you saw it in 48 frames.
Well, maybe you might. I thought the IMAX was gonna be 48 frames.
No, because I saw it at a showcase cinema, and they had three different showings. They had 24 frames, 2D, 24 frames, 3D, and HFR 3D. So I shelled out the $16. You know, I took one for the team, you guys.
There you go.
And like I said, it's the best 3D I've ever seen. One thing that struck me about this movie is how tonally different it is from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yes.
And also, the stakes are so much smaller. Because in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the stakes are the whole fucking world.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
If Sauron gets this ring, yeah. The world ends.
Right. So it took me time to adjust to the tone of this movie. And I'm like, it's right. You know, there's no ring. There's nothing that's going to rule everybody. It's just this whole, it's just this small group of people, essentially.
Yes.
And it really is kind of focusing on the race of the dwarves. You know, it's not every single race in the world. And also how tonally different it is. This is a kid's movie.
Yes.
This is not the darker, more adult-oriented movie that the Lord of the Rings trilogy is. This is a kid's movie.
That was my second complaint.
So, and maybe that has to do with the marketing, you know, or just the expectations of, hey, it's a prequel to the Lord of the Rings, so therefore everybody who's a fan of Lord of the Rings is going to go see this.
Yes.
And I know a lot of kids who are fans of Lord of the Rings, because that, you know, there's a lot, you know, it's like Star Wars, you know, the original trilogy. You know, a lot of kids like it too, but it's also great for the adults. Anyways, so there's just a lot of childish elements in this film. The beginning, the whistle while you work type of song that the dwarves had in Bilbo's home after they finish eating and they toss around all the plates.
Oh, that song is actually in the book. Those lyrics are actually in the book.
But for the movie, it's so ridiculous. It's so silly.
It is silly, but I was actually happy to hear it because that's. That the dwarves do it purposely to fuck with Bilbo when he's basically like getting pissed off at them, and they're like, oh, that's what you hate. Well, then how about a song? And it's in the book, all those lyrics.
I guess,
thought it was kind of cool to finally hear that song.
Well, this is where you have to separate your fondness or remembrance of the book and say, does it really work in the movie? I don't think it works in the movie. Because
it's an important element of the movie. It shows that the dwarves aren't these. Completely, you know, dour individuals, you know.
There's a wood wizard called Radagast.
Yes. Who is only mentioned, by the way, in the books and never seen.
He's way too quirky for an adult to take seriously.
He is. Didn't even need to be there.
So, yeah. Talking trolls and goblins? Never seen in the original, in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You see goblins, you see trolls, they never talk. They grunt and growl and squeal.
In The Hobbit, the troll scene actually happens. It ends differently and it's done differently. Mm-hmm. And they changed it for the movie. Because I do not remember the troll, that troll scene going the way it was where he's like, oh yeah, we're full of gristle. From what I remember, it's Frodo, and Bilbo throwing shit at them and hiding. And they think the trolls start thinking each other's hitting them. And they get into a loud argument, and they start fighting with each other. And as that happens, the sun comes up.
Okay.
Because that's how he buys the time. He gets them to fighting one another, as opposed to, oh, how do we eat these little creatures?
So they extended the scene, you know.
Yeah.
So, and that's fun. Well, yeah. So this movie is 2 hours and 46 minutes long.
Does not need to be that long.
God, I'd hate to see this director's cut. That's the thing with the original trilogy, is that... As long as the movies were theatrically, I wanted to see the director's cut. I was desperate to see the director's cut. I was like, oh my God, there's so... Every single scene in the theatrical version was meant something. I can't wait to see the director's cut. And sure enough, even in the director's cut, almost every single extra scene means something. And it adds to the material. And this one, God help me, this movie needs to be cut by... It can go down to 2 hours easily.
Yeah, you can easily take 45 minutes out of it.
So...
There's stuff in this movie you don't even need.
I want to go back to the beginning of this movie.
Okay.
You're introduced to Lord of the Rings trilogy, Bilbo and Frodo.
Yes.
Threw me off because they look so different because it was 10 years ago that the first movie came out. Frodo, Elijah Wood, is in this movie in the beginning. He looks so different. He's lost weight, you know, and he just didn't look the same. And it's at the same time period just before Gandalf shows up at the Shire, you know? Bilbo, I'm assuming that was Ian Holm.
Yep.
And not an old makeup Martin Freeman. He looked different. His hair looked different. It wasn't as curly. You know, he looked different, so it threw me off. And I don't think you need that whole beginning. You could have just started this movie with a young Bilbo played by Martin Freeman. I want to get back to Martin Freeman now. I was not impressed with him in this movie. I liked him in the Sherlock series, in the first series of Sherlock from the UK.
Okay.
He plays Watson.
Okay.
He was not impressive in this movie, mainly because he doesn't have a lot to do. It's mostly focused on the dwarves.
Yes.
You know? Which is fine, because I think that the dwarves' adventure is pretty good. I like their adventure. I like their backstory. And I like Richard Armitage, who plays the main dwarf.
Thorin Oakenshield.
Yeah. He's pretty badass. But Martin Freeman, up until the point where he meets up with... what's his face? Andy Serkis?
Oh, Gollum.
Gollum, yeah. He really doesn't have much to do, you know?
No.
So, I don't know. He just seemed very out of place. And he seemed like a side character at times. I didn't really see what his motivations were a lot, because there's times when he goes into action and you don't really get the sense of where he's coming from, why he's making these decisions. I hate to compare it, but you have to compare it to the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Every single decision Frodo makes, you understand where he's coming from and why he does it.
Yes.
In this, I don't understand half the decisions he makes or why he makes the decisions.
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with... See, I'm going to go back and have to reread The Hobbit again, because initially when you're reading the book, and he thinks he's had a dream about all these dwarves being there, he wakes up and he finds the contract on his mantelpiece. Then it says in the book, something Tookish woke up inside him, and he decides that he's going to embrace his Took half and go on this adventure. So he decides
to
go.
That was it. Yeah, I didn't see.
There's nothing to indicate that in the movie.
Exactly.
You see him just running out of the house. He's like, I'm going on an adventure.
Yeah, it's so weird. He just sees an empty house after the night with the dwarves and Gandalf, and all of a sudden he just decides. You didn't see why he made that decision.
Because
he's such a cautious person.
Exactly. It would have been great to see the contract on the mantelpiece, and then maybe like, he starts humming the dwarven dirge,
yeah,
like a little bit to himself, and he's like, to see him think about it,
yeah,
like ponder, like, should I go, should I not go? Then like he looks at the contract, maybe a little bit more, like, you know, kind of humming to himself while he's cleaning the house, and he's like, I better hurry because they're gonna be long gone if I don't do this now, you know, lock up and go,
yeah.
But there was none of that. You know, when you said it was for kids, that was my other major complaint, is that there's a lot of just goofy like kid shit in this movie that I was just like, ah. You added this just to get a laugh, like even like,
yeah, from the wood wizard again,
Radagast,
his sled of
bunny rabbits.
I mean, there was nothing like that in the Lord of the Rings.
He's only mentioned by name in Lord of the Rings. You never see anything he does, never. And then you've got like the dwarves are obviously there to get the kids, you know, get the kids going. Like when they're in Rivendell, and he throws a bun. One of them throws a bun at Bomber, and he catches it. And now, because he's so fat, the chair breaks.
Yeah.
You know, the Goblin King with the scrote neck.
Yeah. Scrote neck.
You know, he's overly played. Like, you know, facial expressions. Obviously, that's like, he's a kid villain.
And him falling at the end after they fall down the cliff.
Peter Jackson loves falling off of shit. If you are in a Peter Jackson movie, stay away from any precipices or stairs, because you will invariably fall off it. Well, they fall off no less than three things in the movie in 3x.
So going back to the Goblin King, the Goblin Lair, you know, and yeah, the Cave of Goblins. That action scene and after meeting up with the Goblin King, that was pretty epic. That was really good. That was really well done.
I wish I could have seen more of it. Like, there's some of the camera shots that he chose that I wish he
really
didn't.
Because there were tons of far away camera shots. It looked like a side scrolling video game.
Yeah, it did look like a side, but I wish part of me like wanted to see a little bit the action a little bit closer, especially when they're doing that cool, what I thought was a fairly cool duel. They're fighting the goblins on one side of a swinging bridge.
Yeah,
and then they kick off the bridge and they swing across and they fight the goblins on the other side. And half of them jump off.
Yeah.
Then it swings back the other way. They got to fight the goblins again.
That was great.
I wish I could have a little bit closer to see more of it.
Really?
It did look so small.
I don't know. I think if he closed up on it, it would have taken a lot of the scale, you know, of it away. And I think seeing both sides of the chasm as the that part of the bridge is swinging, I think that added to it.
And then Scrotneck shows up and gets it in two strokes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hey, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? How about the score itself? There were parts where the score was great, but then there were parts where it was just unbearable. It was terrible. It was misplaced at times, you know?
What I remember of the score is just a number of variations of the Dwarven Dirge, you know, where there's like that, you know, you see like, you know, the dwarves are down and all you hear is do, do, do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do, do, do. Like, you know, I guess in my mind I'm comparing it to listening to the music, there's nothing outstanding about this score.
I don't know. I think there's some pretty good stuff in here. It's Howard Shore who did the score, who did the other Lord of the Rings movies. And I think it's just the placement of the score at times.
Maybe, because I remember like when you and I went to go see The Dark Knight. And you saw me bouncing in my chair when I could hear like this Hans Zimmer score.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Batman, I'm like, dun, yeah, dun, dun. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
This didn't give me any of that.
Yeah.
Even like the parts where they really want you to cue in on like the emotion. And I'm not sure what's a spoiler in this movie or what's not, considering that there's.
Yeah, well, we'll move into spoilers soon. It's interesting to look at the scores because the Rotten Tomatoes score is around 64, 65, I think. And on IMDb, the Metascore is 58, but the user score is 8.6. So, you know, it's doing very well. Obviously, it's the number one movie in the country, yeah. And it's doing well financially, which you would expect. And I think it will continue to do well. So it's interesting. You know, I've listened to a couple of people talk about this movie and how much they did enjoy it, you know, so I don't know, it's just interesting to see the critics versus the public.
Yeah, I also didn't like the way some of the CGI looked. Some of the CGI looked absolutely god-awful.
So here's the thing, seeing it in this 48 frames per second 3D, the motion of the movements of the characters and the actors, it looked like it's so hard to explain. It looked like a British television show.
Yes, you know? Like that slick look to it.
Right, and it's like, and there's times when there's movements, it looks like it's at 1.5 times speed. Like there's like just quick movements, and when there's a lot of epic action scenes, you know what it reminded me of a video game cutscene.
Yes,
that's what it looked like. The way the some of the characters are thrown back by a larger character, you know, by a blow of a sword or something. That's what it reminded me of. So it took me a little while to get used to that, the feel of it, the texture of the movie, if you will.
Yes.
And get into the story, you know, and behind the story, you know, there's just not much to it. I'm actually kind of anxious to see the next movie. It leaves you with, you know, obviously with a cliffhanger to continue on with the story. It ends very similarly to the first Lord of the Rings movie.
I had something to say about that too. Just logically, a logical progression, or the first question I would have asked if I was in that dwarven party.
Yeah. But I want to go back to the pale orc. You didn't like his character?
No.
Why not?
He's a nothing villain.
Really?
He's not menacing. He's not cunning. He's just there.
You don't think he's menacing?
Not at all.
Why not?
He doesn't have a menacing look about him. He's just this orc with no skin and some scars. and a little claw rake that you use for your garden. He's got that
for
a hand.
He put the spear of a claw through his arm to make an extension.
Yeah.
You saw the... I mean, that's pretty badass.
You know who's more badass than that? Earl from The Walking Dead.
I don't know. I thought he was a pretty badass character.
I'm more afraid of Earl from The Walking Dead than I would be about this orc.
I don't know. I thought he was an interesting foe and as the main villain for... You know, because he's pitted up against Thorin. the dwarf king, if you will.
Yes.
And their final stance, standoff towards the end of the movie, I thought that was a great placement of the music, because that certainly added to the scene
Yep.
and how tense that scene was, and how epic it really was. I really liked that standoff.
See, that again was just cheap. To me, it was cheap.
But then again, you have we should get into
Yeah,
spoilers.
right. We're gonna do spoilers from here on out because I'm not sure what is. All right.
Okay, so you have Thorin coming up to him, and he gets blown back, if you will, blasted onto the ground, and then the Pale Orc has his henchmen,
Yeah,
go and kill
go
him.
take his head from me.
Yeah, but then out of nowhere,
There comes
Bilbo.
Bilbo! Ah! Like freaking King Leonidas.
Yeah, but once again, that's a scene. Where does that motivation come from?
And
How does he get this bravery all of a sudden?
that's part of what cheapened it for me. It's what I call a cheap heat scene from when I used to wrestle, where you'd have just a general bad guy just going to the audience and going, USA sucks, just to get the usually pro-American crowd, USA, and then,
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
no. And then you have this orc doing the same thing. And he's like, look, it's Thor, look, or look, Thorin Oakenshield, I'm alive, motherfucker. And
Yeah.
he's like, oh, not for long.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of more, no pun intended, two-dimensional characters
Yeah.
and reasoning in this movie, whereas in the Lord of the Rings movie, there's a lot more depth to every character, and all their motivations a lot more complex.
Yeah, and I like Thorin Oakenshield as a character in this movie, believe it or not, because he's exactly how I expect a dwarf king to be. He's dark, he's brooding. He
Yeah.
doesn't really have much in the way of lines other than just like follow me, And then for the people who miss Legolas, we have a smaller version of Legolas
Yeah.
in the form of Keeley,
Yeah.
who's got long hair and fires arrows,
Yeah.
and he's really good at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Speaking of previous characters that you're used to, Cate Blanchett comes in. She looks exactly the same, but still hot as ever. And Hugo Weaving comes in.
Every time I see Hugo Weaving in a Lord of the Rings movie, the first thing I think of is, "Welcome to Rivendell, Mr. Anderson."
Oh, speaking of Rivendell, so with the 3D, I don't know if you caught it with the 2D version, when they come up upon Rivendell and they see Rivendell in the background, in the distance. The 3D was amazing and it created depth, but it looks like a really bad matte
Matte
painting.
painting. That's exactly what I was thinking
Yeah,
when
there
I saw
was
it.
no depth to the backdrop of Rivendell.
Except the water.
Yeah, moving water. It looked like an old velvet moving
Exactly,
picture.
with the
Yeah.
weird lights in it. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's what I thought too. I was like, "Eh, we've been here before. It this looks so much better the last time we were in Rivendell."
Yeah.
The Fellowship. I'm like, Rivendell doesn't look this flat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there's a lot of two-dimensional things for such a three-dimensional movie that I think lends itself to it being a kids' movie. I think
Of course.
kids will love this
Oh, kids!
movie.
My nephews are probably champing at the bit to go see it,
Sure.
and I'm probably gonna have to take them because I'll go sit through it again.
And Christopher Lee shows up as Saruman.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, oh no, it's great. But did you know how old he is? He's
No,
90 years old.
Count Dooku shows up
Yeah.
in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, he is 90 years old now, he didn't look that much different than the original
Yeah,
trilogy.
but
So,
I think also too they had to have done some sort of CGI touch up
yeah, possibly.
on all
Well,
of them.
there were times when Ian McKellen showed up and he looked so much
Haggard,
older, and
exactly.
then he looked the same as the previous trilogy. So there were times that it looked really odd, like they were, you could tell they were filming on different days or something.
Yeah, because like when you first see him when he's asking Bilbo if he wants to go on an adventure, if you look at his eyes are really droopy down. You can see like inside like his lower lid, and his eyes have really really great shadow over them. And then later on, he looks okay. He doesn't like is he was he not feeling well like when they shot this? He catch the flu.
Any other spoilery material?
Let's
You
think.
want to get to the end of Bilbo popping in?
There's something a little bit little spoilery here that I'm just gonna make mention of for later for people who are, I believe it shows up in the Two Towers. We've already seen the Lord of Moria. in this party. Balin Sundofunden, who was part of the original dwarf party. And I don't want to say what this reference is, because I'm not sure if it's a spoiler for any of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so I don't really want to mention it. But it's a scene where they find something of his while they're going through the mines.
Oh, okay. Something of whose again?
The Lord of Moria. It's Balin, son of Funden, and he becomes the Lord of Moria.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Where the goblins all took over in that the goblins took over in, well, they took over in, it's taken over in The Hobbit, and in The Lord of the Rings we find out later.
Oh, a book?
No, it's a tombstone. They find Balin's tombstone in Moria in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
because in The Hobbit it's overrun by the goblins. That's where they are when they get captured in Moria.
Right, right.
And then because they're looking for a dwarf tunnel, and you see who the future king of that section of dwarfdom is going to be.
Yeah.
Before Sauron's shadow takes over everything.
Interesting. Okay.
I just thought it's something kind of fun to mention.
Oh, it's a good foreshadowing then for the future. It's good reference to the original trilogy as well.
And then at the end, the last scene where the eagles drop them off.
Yeah.
And like, there's Erebor, the lonely mountain. Motherfucker, you couldn't have these eagles fly us there? That looks far. Looks real far.
There's a meme going around about that, but you can make that argument with all the other movies as well.
Yeah.
Why can't eagles save them everywhere, you know?
Well, yeah, but I mean, Noah goes on to The Hobbit later on, which I'm not going to spoil for anybody. I think it's going to be kind of, I think seeing that scene with the eagles going after the orcs, you're in for a treat later.
Yeah. So are you anxious for the next one to see Smaug?
I don't think you're going to see Smaug in the next movie.
You don't think so?
I don't think you're going to see him until the very end.
It's called The Desolation of Smaug.
It is, but I think you're going to see more of them traveling toward the Lonely Mountain.
Really?
I don't think you're going to see Smaug until the third movie, or at the very, very last possible moment of the second movie. They're going to tease that like you wouldn't believe.
Well, the synopsis for the second movie, the dwarves Bilbo and Gandalf have successfully escaped the Misty Mountains, but Bilbo has gained the One Ring. They all continue their journey to get their gold back off the dragon Smaug. So, yeah, you're right. It might just be...
Because they have to go through the Mirkwood next. That's the next obstacle.
Oh, that's right, because in the third one, it's called There and Back Again.
There and Back Again.
This one is, they are in Smaug's lair, but will they get their gold and return
that's
home
right.
safely?
So I think that's where you're going to finally see Smaug. Is they're going to show him at the very end, maybe a little bit more of him at the end of the second movie. This is my guess.
Yeah.
And then in the third movie, you're going to see him full on.
Yeah, I want to go back to the riddle, the guessing game between Gollum and Bilbo. I thought that was well done. I like that.
I like every minute of that, because that's the key scene in The Hobbit.
Yeah.
And
how great did the CGI for Andy Serkis and Gollum look?
I love the fact they made his eyes glow in the dark.
Yeah.
With off the reflected water. Yeah. Like, that looks cool. And it makes Gollum that much, like...
And there's so much more flexibility, I don't know, more elasticity, I should say, in his face,
right,
you know?
Yeah, when did Lord of the Rings originally...
2001.
2001, so you've... 10 years worth of computer advancement,
and it was great back
animation.
Then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to improve on what you've already seen.
Yeah.
You know, and it shows.
Yeah, it does. And you know, he does a great job of acting and voicing Gollum.
You know?
I mean, the man can't do any wrong.
No.
Yeah. I'm anxious to see the Planet of the Apes.
Sequel. Just from seeing that poster.
Yeah.
The teaser poster. I have to see this. I have to see the first one. I got to see the second one.
Rise of the Planet.
I haven't seen Rise yet.
You still haven't seen. Oh man.
We digress.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, but we're gonna go check with Hermano over in Hobbiton. Hermano, your thoughts?
I just want to make it known that I watched it in 24 frames a second. I did not watch it in the 48 frames high frame rate 3D. And I also. I've never read The Hobbit book. My only experience with The Hobbit at all was the, I think, Rankin Bass animated movie that came out in the 80s, and I barely remembered it. So that's pretty much just a little bit of a look into my knowledge of The Hobbit. So basically, I thought the movie started off a little slow. I liked the prologue with the dwarf kingdom that was under siege by Smaug the Dragon. I loved all that stuff. I thought once it got to the Shire and you meet young Bilbo, young Bilbo. I thought it slowed down quite a bit right there, where the dinner scene, I guess, in the Shire at Bilbo's house with he meets all the dwarves that he's inevitably going to go on this adventure with, reluctantly. I thought that scene was kind of brutally long, but once they get on the road and they go on their adventure, I was pretty much in for the rest of the movie. I actually really, really like the movie. I know there's been a lot of, on IMDb, it's got like a 65, which is not horrible, but it's not, what you're accustomed to seeing from Peter Jackson. And I think all the other Lord of the Rings movies are like, 90% and above from all critics and stuff like that. So I was a little shocked and I was a little scared going in. But I mean, I really don't see too many problems in the movie. I definitely... I was in, as you know, once they got on, their adventure, I was completely there. I love Martin Freeman as Bilbo. I thought he did a great job. It was awesome to see Gandalf again, and played by Ian McKellen. And I really, really liked Thorin Oakenshield, the head dwarf. I thought he was awesome. As far as all the other dwarves, they're kind of in the background. They really don't, do much, I guess, throughout the movie. They're kind of there for comedic effect most of the time, which didn't bother me over too much, because it's kind of sparse as far as the comedy goes. I mean, it's not overwhelming like I would say like Avengers kind of was or tried to be. It follows the same tone, I guess, is Fellowship of the Ring, the first Lord of the Rings movie. It's kind of a lighthearted movie. It doesn't get overly serious, like the Two Towers and Return of the King did. So it's a good starting off point. You get to meet the characters. You get to know what their motivations are, what they're striving to do throughout the movie. Just some of the scenes that I liked specifically were... I liked the troll dinner scene, where they're they steal some horses and they're trying to cook them up, and Bilbo gets caught up in that, and where that eventually goes. I liked a lot of the battle scenes, like specifically the one in the goblin, I guess, cave or chasm, whatever. But I'd have to say my favorite scene throughout the entire movie was the appearance of Gollum, and that whole scene with him and Bilbo was awesome. Where they, Bilbo comes in contact with the ring, and they have that little riddle match where they, they have something riding on who wins this little riddle game that they play with each other. My favorite scene was when. I guess this isn't really a spoiler, but Bilbo eventually puts on the ring, and he's invisible, and Gollum's trying to search for him. I love that scene. I mean, just the look on Gollum's face, as he's just so destroyed that he's lost this ring, and he wants it so bad, and he actually, drops, he gets a little teary-eyed and stuff. It was a powerful, powerful scene. I really liked it. And then ultimately, where the movie goes towards the end, I really, really liked. I forgot to mention the opening with the attack by Smaug was awesome. That was probably my favorite action scene of the entire movie, and it happens right in the beginning, so got off to a great start. I've been hearing that there are pacing problems in this movie. I really don't know what people were expecting. I mean, a lot of the it follows a lot of the same beats as the Lord of the Rings movies. It's just a lot of traveling, and you go to places, you meet some people, you get back on the road, there's a battle scene. It kind of follows the same formula. Maybe that's the problem. They were expecting something different. I had really no issues with the movie whatsoever. I mean, as the credits were rolling, I was completely in. Like I was never bored. I was in throughout. Like I just never found myself being bored or not liking something that I was seeing on the screen. I mean, but maybe that's because I don't have that experience with the book. I never read it, and You know, I've also heard some complaints where people were saying that, well, that wasn't in the book, but I don't know why that's automatically bad. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, I don't have, like I said, I don't have that experience. So I can't point, I couldn't even point out the things that were or were not in the book. So, I mean, maybe that's an advantage. And I'm basically, you know, giving my review based solely on the movie as, you know, it stands. And I actually liked it quite a bit. So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I'm forgetting. I don't think so. So, yeah, I'll end my review there. I'm not going to go into spoilers. I mean, I definitely recommend the movie. If I had to give it a grade, I'd give it an A-. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I don't have too many complaints. I mean, I completely dug it. So, yeah, there you go.
What a guy.
Well done, sir. So we've heard his grade. What's your grade?
I'm going to give it a solid B.
I would give it a B as well. So as far as we know, that's a B average from the First Time Watch This Podcast. That may be amended.
Yes, we will revise this at a later date.
Yes. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watch This Podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. You can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com. Oh, and it seems here, I thought that was an edit. I was incorrect. You can also follow us on Tumblr. I don't know the actual address.
search First Time Watchers on Tumblr.com.
But, you know, if Armando has it on here, you would have heard this already.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. And we have just reached 10 reviews on iTunes.
Yes.
Thank you, people. Thank you, fans. Thank you all. Keep bringing it in. We love feedback.
Every review helps us out, moves us up the chain.
Yes.
In the iTunes store, so you'll be able to find us a lot easier.
Hopefully someday we will be found without typing us in.
Exactly.
If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on a Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be talking about The Sound of Noise.
That's going to be the First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.
Hobbits.
Hey, can you hand those to me real quick? It's on top of the Magnavox box. So now open them up.
Oh, boy.
So apparently my mom's yoga pants got into my laundry somehow.
Why do you want me handling your mother's pants?
Oh, because I need some good video for the show. I was about to use the story of sadness at the end of something that people expect to hear some sort of, you know, chuckly giggle. So I was like, oh, my plan is controversial. I was going to give those back to my mom, but now Tim's here. Here, grab my mother's pants.
Oh, great. Thanks.